Yeah. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on StashMyComics.com podcast, episode number 26. We are powered by Geek Energy. This is the beginning of a new story arc for us. Episode 25, if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, take a break now. Go back and listen to the hour and a half plus podcast extravaganza that we did for you, the listener, where Jason and Kelly both had colds.
That's a way to sell it.
Right? It wasn't planned, though. It was spontaneous.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody plans to get a cold.
Well, don't you never get rid of a cold, though? Isn't it, like, always with you?
No, I feel fine.
Time to time.
Oh. I think you're thinking of herpes.
You get those two mixed up, you have bigger problems than a cold.
I confuse that every day.
All right, moving on.
With me, as always, is the editor of StashMyComics.com, Jason. How are you today?
Better than last week.
That goes without saying. You sound so much better. I'm glad you don't have a cold.
Me too.
Right alongside Jason is the man behind Geek Cinema, Tom. Tom, how are you?
Immediately to his right, like a foot away from him.
Yeah.
I'm breathing on his cheek.
And that goes into what I want to talk about. The perception of...
You spit on me. Stop it.
Kelly couldn't be with us today. She's hanging out with the family. Always a cool thing to do. But Kelly, since you're not here, you can't defend yourself. So we're going to make fun of you for the next hour or so. Like jabs and stuff. Well, at least I am. But taking Kelly's place today... It's the man behind our video game reviews, Scott. Scott, how are you today?
Surviving so far.
Okay. Keep those goals high, Scott.
I'm trying, but when you're in a house full of sickness and disease, you know, because I have a 9-year-old,
sure,
you do your best.
Speaking of my daughter, you might hear her singing a song she wrote about the Roadrunner throughout the course of the show in the background. Now, she's 28, so it's a little embarrassing.
Right on. I
there are no words.
Scott, I know how you feel. I've got a den full of kids here myself. I've got four ranging from 13 and legally brain dead to 1 and legally brain dead.
I think you need a new doctor.
Well, no. My dad said that to me
a
couple of weeks ago. He looked at me and he's like, when you have kids and they turn 13, you're going to see that they were just like you. I said, Dad, no, they're not going to be like me. He says, yeah, they're going to be legally brain dead. Scott, you...
That's very harsh.
Scott,
awkward.
You know my
awkward,
dad,
everybody. So. Awkward.
Scott, you know my dad. You know how he is.
Yeah, that's a nice comment.
One time in my house, we were at dinner, we were eating chicken. My dad put down the drumstick out of nowhere. Dad out of nowhere said, you know, that Denzel Washington's a handsome, handsome man. True story, swear to God.
Wow. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about perception, like how you perceive things. And the whole idea for this came from last night when I was sitting with my 13-year-old daughter watching Clueless. Well,
Tim, you really shouldn't tell us these things.
Whoa, back up a second. Clueless is brilliant. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I have no fear. That movie defined a generation. At least...
No.
Well, okay, Tim, you went a step too far.
See, if he had said that, you know, Mean Girls or Heathers was brilliant, I'd agree.
Clueless is a lot better than Mean Girls.
Well...
I don't know about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mean Girls is great. Clueless is better.
Clueless is very dated.
Well, it's 90s, sure.
And why we're even talking about this on a comic book podcast is beyond me. But
Yeah, we're talking about our children and Clueless. We've really drawn in our core audience here.
But anyways, the teacher in Clueless, the guy, the bald guy, he played the grand Nagus in Star Trek as the Ferengi. He's also the voice of the T-Rex in Toy Story. So if you close your eyes when his parts come on in the movie, all you can imagine is the T-Rex telling Cher how...
And he's the Sicilian of the Princess Bride.
Yeah. Inconceivable.
That's the guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Wallace Shawn.
Yeah, there you go. But I just thought that was neat. Like, seeing him on film in a movie like that, and then closing your eyes and knowing kind of what he's more famous for, at least with my kids and stuff, is the T-Rex from Toy Story. So every time I hear him talk, I just imagine the T-Rex bitching out Cher. It makes the movie so much more enjoyable for me.
Well, I think my take on perception, I think DiCaprio was still in a dream at the end. I'm sorry, you said perception, not I'm sick.
Yeah, not Inception.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My apologies.
I was a little lost there.
Yeah. Huh. So you think he was still in a dream because you're a negative person. Isn't that the whole thing? If you think he's in a dream, you're a negative person.
I'll tell you the truth, Jason. I don't care if he was a dream or not. I'm mad at Chris Nolan for ending the movie with the question. I would rather know than not know.
Well, Pan's Labyrinth was a question. That was a great film.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's no Watchmen.
It's no Hellboy. I mean, come on. Yeah. Guillermo del Toro's claim to fame has to be Blade 2. So.
I don't think it has to be.
It does. It does.
Can we not make it that way?
Is that the one with the really bad CGI ninjas?
The ninja vampires,
yes.
where everybody knows kung fu, like
the worst CGI ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're all afraid of the sun, and it's
that's all I've seen of that movie. I think is that clip, the CGI vampires, the bad one.
It gets better, but yeah.
Like night is blue and day is gold. Yeah. All right. Anyways, that makes.
Does anyone else never know what Tim is talking about?
I know what.
Yeah.
I'm talking. All the time.
I have a core group of followers that know what I'm talking about. They're called the
just like a cult leader.
Yeah, yeah.
Just smile and nod, Tom. Smile and nod.
My followers listen and they pay attention and you'll see it on the comments of the podcast.
Okay.
Will their comments be as nonsensical as some of the things you say sometimes?
Probably not, but that's not the point.
I never visit the site. I don't know.
All right. I think we've gone on long enough. We're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we got some really cool news items to talk about. Something having to do with Professor X, which I kind of made Jason a little mad about by telling him. But, oh well. And some political stuff, too. I don't like to bring politics into this, but I'll tell you why I am when we come back in just a second.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are at the news segment right now. We got a couple of news items that we want to throw your way, and two of them we're gonna pay particular attention to. But it needs to be said that Hasbro has relinquished some of their licenses to become movies. Like Monopoly, which already has a script set, ready to go. Yeah, what kind of movie are they going to make about that? Some guy with a monocle, and he's trucking around selling...
Well, I mean, I guess you could have said the same thing about the Clue movie that came out in, like, the 90s.
Yeah, but that was good, though. I actually watched that the other day.
I want to know who paid Ridley Scott to direct the Monopoly movie.
He's not going to direct it. He's going to be a producer.
Oh, well, I want to know who paid him to be involved.
Well, after Ridley Scott got through with it, Prometheus actually was his version of Monopoly movie.
Right on.
Oh, speaking of Prometheus, James Cameron's directing the sequel, Prometheus's.
Promethei.
So, yeah, Scott, as soon as you said that he was directing Monopoly, all I could think about was James Cameron directing Monopolies.
I said, why do we have a pre-show meeting if we're just going to ignore what we decide upon?
I have no idea.
We said this wasn't a news item we were going to discuss. Too. That said, I cannot wait for the Hungry Hungry Hippos movie. I hope it gets a hard R.
They say they're going to take the animated route with that, but I don't know. I was talking to my on Thursdays. I play Magic with a bunch of buddies of mine, and we were talking about Hungry Hungry Hippos, and we wanted to see it a la, like, Little Shop of Horrors, but what the ending was supposed to be for it, these massive zombified hungry hippos just come trucking around and start eating people everywhere, and that's all it is for 2 hours.
In the ending of Little Shop as It Remains in the stage musical version.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody knows what I'm talking about except for you. See? Pretty much. See, you know what I'm saying.
I do, because I've directed the musical before, yeah.
There you go. But anyways, the news items that I want to talk about, Scott, I'm going to let you take this first one. Tell us what this is about.
There is a Senate candidate over in Maine who is being attacked by the Republican Party because she plays World of Warcraft.
She's not being attacked by her the person she's running against. It's by the party in general. And this isn't to say bad about Republicans or Democrats, because I honestly don't care about either one of them. But just the point of fact that they are attacking her for leading a quote-unquote double life.
Yep.
Because she's this person that does whatever she does for herself, for her job, and all that stuff during the day. And at night, she is this orc assassin. Who loves to stab people and cuss a lot. And what was the one thing that really got you fuming about that? What did it say?
Maine GOP party spokesman David Sorensen, he sounds like a douche, but it says certainly the fact that she spends so much time on a video game says something about her work ethic and, again, her immaturity.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Scott, you first. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I agree. I'm looking at this, and you know, they're saying that she can't do anything in politics, but she's got a master's degree in social work.
Right.
She runs school programs for a statewide mental health center, and nobody, you know, pretty much nobody in politics plays video games, but they pretty much screwed us all for years.
Yeah, like, because she plays World of Warcraft. Now I don't play World of Warcraft, but I know that games like that can be very addicting. Obviously, it's not for her because she is awake during the day, you know, and not really stabbing people. And maybe she does cuss a lot, but I don't know. But the point of fact is that playing video games does not judge your character as a person. I mean, if that's the case, then what are you if you play Super Mario a lot? Tom?
Living in the 80s? I don't...
What are you if you play Super Mario a lot? You're awesome.
Okay, fair enough, but then games like Parasite Eve from the original PlayStation, or even taking it to Silent Hill and stuff like that, does that mean you are this person that wanders around in mysticism and stuff like that all day? And no, that's dumb. That's totally stupid. Tom, give me your thoughts on this.
I don't know how a candidate playing World of Warcraft is any more offensive, quote-unquote, than a candidate being a fan of football or pro wrestling or boxing or whatever. What she does in her spare time is her own business. I don't care. I don't think any voter cares either. This is just the games of politics and political parties play in election season. Let's find anything we can and try and turn that and spin that into a negative attack at us. That's stupid.
Right.
Besides, I mean, look, the 12 people in Maine aren't going to be swayed by this.
Now, there was one cool thing out of this. The opposing candidate, the Republican that currently holds the seat, he said that, and I'm not going to quote exactly, but roundabout what he said was what she does in her personal time is her business, and he quite frankly doesn't care whether she plays video games or not. He says that he has no control over what the party itself does as far as the smear campaigns and the negative ads. But like all people that are running, he saves his own ass by saying that he doesn't like the negativity ads and all this stuff anyways. I think the negativity ads are a waste of time, because all it does is it brings negativity and it makes you hate and it makes you
it was a stupid thing for them to do anyway, because look, anyone who would turn their vote away from her because of this wasn't going to vote for her anyway.
That's right.
Anyone who doesn't care, which is the majority of voters, I would assume, isn't going to be swayed one way or the other. But the people who might now vote for her who weren't going to vote for her are people who play WoW.
the seven swing voters in Maine.
Absolutely.
Right? The, in the 18 to 35 demographic.
just a waste of, you know, whatever, JPEGs.
Jason, what are your thoughts?
Last time I checked, geek culture was pretty mainstream now. I don't think, like Tom said, that, you know, the only thing they've done is bring attention to the fact that she plays WoW. That's just going to give something for, you know, geeks to identify and want to vote for. But the one thing I want to know is, how'd they find out? Did they pay someone to play WoW all day to, you know, follow her around?
No kidding, because if they did that, then they're doing the same thing that they're paying her for. Go ahead, Tom.
I think it says in the article, she on her blog openly talks about how she plays WoW, so it's not like it's a secret.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Because she's a...
She
likes to, like, prison shank, I guess.
Still. Well, how do they know she cusses a lot?
Because she said that, too, didn't she? Scott, is that right?
It says it in the article, but it just says that she has a potty mouth. It says something about cussing later, but, I mean... Obviously, that any 25 to 30 year old talk.
Yeah, right. I mean, come on. Have you listened to the 14 year olds on?
Wait, an online gamer who uses bad language. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that goes without saying. But all right, so I think we're all in agreement that this is one of the most ridiculous things we've heard today, and that it shouldn't have even been done. I mean, so what if she plays World of Warcraft? That holds no precedence on her political views or what she plans to do in that small section of Maine. So, moving on.
Stupid politics.
Yeah, stupid politics. That's why I hate politics. I don't like talking politics with my dad because he's a diehard Republican, and I am not. So he likes to tell me how wrong I am all the time, but he can't be wrong. So, but anyways.
It still works.
Yeah, right. news item number two. Avengers vs. X-Men is coming to a close. Issue 12, I believe, came out this past Wednesday. Am I right? Yeah, well, anyways. Yeah, it's on newsstands right now. And the big to-do about it is Professor X. If any of you don't know what's going on and you haven't read the issue yet, then I highly recommend skipping past this news segment, as because there will be spoilers. So... skip now. Professor X is killed off. I don't find it surprising. They say that it's going to have major ramifications throughout the Marvel Universe and helps bring about the release of Uncanny Avengers and the all-new X-Men and stuff like that. But we all know, if you're not Uncle Ben or Gwen Stacy, you don't stay dead forever. Tom, let's start with you first.
You know, I actually had managed to read the issue before I noticed there's any sort of Captain America's death, Superman's death style brouhaha about this, and people were talking about it like it was a thing. I didn't think of it as a thing when I read the issue, because I kind of said, as he died, I was like, well, that's, okay, that's a cool angle on the story, but hasn't he died before?
The last
Messiah Complex.
Yeah, but he's back now, obviously.
But he got shot in the head in Messiah Complex, and he lost his powers, or he had to find his memory or something.
And he went cruising with his space chick for a while, for a couple of years.
Lalandra?
Lalandra,
space
on it for a while.
Wasn't that like in the 90s? Or was that more...
Yeah.
I don't know.
The 90s, I think.
Anyways.
So, it didn't really strike me as a big deal, because comic book deaths are kind of commonplace. Which, I mean, comic books are soap operas, essentially. So he dies, they'll bring him back. They'll do some story stuff that will directly reflect this in the next year, 2 years, but he'll be back in 3 years or so, whatever.
Right, and in the span of continuity inside the universe, it'll only have been a couple months. Jason, what are your thoughts here?
I thought the same thing when you told me was, oh, well, he died at the end of Messiah Complex, too, so, you know, and he was back, like, 3 issues later.
What'd you say on the phone? Thanks for ruining it for me?
Thanks for spoiling it.
Oops, I thought you knew.
Well, I haven't had the issue yet.
Well, now you don't have to. Now you know what happens. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I guess this is something that I kind of saw coming for a while. I thought it was kind of cheesy that the Cyclops killed him. It just made it seem kind of cheap.
Well, isn't that like the ultimate jab, though, the one that's been the constant leader in the field of the X-Men finally gets to kill off the worthless layabout that directs from behind the scenes?
Yeah, but Cyclops has been kind of getting kind of like a sacrificial character for years now.
Maybe Emma Frost has finally convinced him that he's a total badass now, that he's got part of the Phoenix powers, and he doesn't need it.
Cyclops is awesome now.
Right?
Cyclops has been awesome for the past couple of years.
But he's still with Emma Frost, right?
Well, yeah, but that's the whole reason why he's awesome now, is because he... You know, he went from being such a one-dimensional, monotone character to, you know, when he got with him, before he got with Emma, and then after that, he's, you know, the unconditional leader of mutant kind.
Once a bad guy, always a bad guy, though. Don't you think that she could have manipulated him to do that?
I don't know. I think he would have enough mental safeguards to, you know, protect against that. I mean, he did date the world's best telepath for years.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. But, okay, so I think it's safe to say that with the death of Professor X, as shocking as it may be, it does not come as a shock to me or even to Scott. And it just doesn't seem like something like this is going to last. You know, because Professor X, his popularity increased significantly with the films, with Patrick Stewart, the man, playing Professor X. And now with the First Class movies coming, the sequel to that coming out, Professor X is a prominent character there, too. So his death isn't going to stay.
Actually, you know what? Since you just mentioned the First Class movies, what they'll probably do is they'll de-age him. So he's more like his First Class counterpart.
Right on. Right on. Well, yeah, with a reboot in Marvel now, you know, that definitely seems like a possibility. So, final thoughts on that, Tom, Scott, what do you got?
It's just another comic book death. I mean, it's not a huge shameel. It's, you know, whatever.
Scott?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with the consensus here. You know, I'd be surprised if he's not back in a year.
Yeah. Right on. So we will end it there. We're going to take a break for a second. When we come back, we're going to hit up the pull list, comic books that we chose for you, the listener, to take a look at this week. It's all about Secret Wars #1. And because it's October, you need to read a scary book. So it's going to be Wolverine, Punisher, Ghost Rider, Hearts of Darkness. We'll be right back.
Hi, Grandpa. Hey, Grandpa, say, have you ever used StashMyComics.com?
Grandpa.
I know they didn't have the internet when you were born, Grandpa, 7,000 years ago, but now they do. Thank you. And you should go on an internet, Grandpa, to StashMyComics.com and catalog your comic books. Actually, it's completely free to use. even all the interactive features such as the member reviews. Well, I thought you'd never asked. They do have a blog with daily reviews and editorial content, as well as a weekly podcast. Yes, I too will go make a donation to this internet comic book webpage in order to keep the service free. It has suddenly occurred to me that my grandfather is dead, therefore you cannot be him. Do you know where I live?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the poll list. Comic books that we chose for you, the reader, to check out this week. This week it's all about Secret Wars, number one, and Hearts of Darkness. Tom, let's go ahead and start with Secret Wars. Tell us what it's all about.
Sure. Secret Wars is, it was the first ever big company-wide crossover from either Marvel or DC. The granddaddy of your big event books, phrase trademarked. And it's certainly, Marvel, all the Marvel heroes and all the Marvel villains are whisked away from Earth in some mechanical Stonehenge-looking thing and taken to some other universe by someone called the Beyonder, who's going to make them sort of fight for him, his entertainment. It's like an intergalactic cockfight.
Yes, pretty much.
Essentially, with superheroes.
The thing that I noticed about this was it had, like, the significant characters at that time when this came out. Like you had all but the Invisible Woman from the Fantastic Four. You obviously had Spider-Man. You had a collection of the X-Men and a collection of the Avengers. Now, can I say that Wasp's outfit was horrendous? Did anybody else agree with me on that?
And her hair.
And she was a little bossy, like...
Yeah, sure, I do.
I am the leader of the Avengers, but we will defer to Captain America because people may not trust me enough to lead. Well, Wasp, you're the Wasp, and Captain America's Captain America, so...
I also love, in looking at it, I love that, I have the trade paperback version of Secret Wars, and I love how the first page... The heroes kind of all calling them doing their roll call.
Yeah.
And the villains doing their roll call. I think that's great. And also, I also love when you... Yeah. Right. And then when you read the dialogue, it's great how you can't... There's absolutely no difference in character from character to character.
That was one of my big hang-ups with this, is like with Jim Shooter, I am not a fan of Jim Shooter as a writer. As an editor, he was good, and he was with Marvel during a big boom in the 80s for popularity of characters and stuff like that. And while he was the editor-in-chief, he drove Marvel in a really good direction. As a writer, I hate him. And this is prime example of that. I mean, it's basic, you know, like there's not much to it. Like you said, a group of heroes and a group of villains are brought to this strange world to fight. The idea is very sound, but Shooter himself, the script that he writes is very weak, and his dialogue is just crap. I don't like it. It's terrible, and it shows here. It's well-rounded as far as choice of characters, but it serves its purpose, which was to fall in with the toy line. I mean, that was the whole reason why the series was made, was to go along with the collection of toys.
Yeah, the thing to make clear, the toys came first, and they wrote the series around the idea of having a toy line.
That's right. But aside from that, I mean, there was one really cool part, though, when they were doing the roll call of the villains, and they mentioned Galactus. And he's just kind of standing there, staring off into the distance. And then Ultron realizes that everything is living flesh and he has to kill everybody. So he starts shooting at people. They use Molecule Man to launch Ultron up to Galactus. Galactus pays no attention to him until Ultron shoots at him. And then just Galactus looks, sucks the energy right out of him, drops him, and then goes back to what he was doing. I was like, oh, Galactus is so badass.
That's anymore. I was like, when the hero roll call and they're running down the line, and the thing just introduced himself as the Easter Bunny. Yeah. And nothing else.
Jason, let me get your thoughts on Secret Wars number one.
Yeah, there are a lot of eye rolls in it. Definitely the whole the roll call thing. And it's not just, I understand that you have to, you know, basically do a roll call with that many characters, but it's just the way it's handled. Like, you who call yourself Molecule Man. Like, really? Yeah. And then later on, it's, and then he's, what is it, Crusher Creel, but he says, yeah. I who call myself Crusher Creel, or I Crusher Creel, like, he has to say his own name, third person talking.
The absorbing man is safe.
This is one of the things where
I think he was supposed to be making fun of Dr. Octopus there.
Watch that swinging of yours, absorbing man. I'm Dr. Octopus, and I'll tear you apart. Whatever.
I think this is one of the things where it's hard to judge it as one issue. You have to judge the whole series.
It's dated. That's for sure.
Yeah. So it's all right. It's not, you know, groundbreaking or anything.
Scott, what are your thoughts on Secret Wars number one?
As I said earlier, I have a 9-year-old son, and this reminds me a lot of the Superhero Squad show that was on a bit ago, but without the humor. It's like an 80s comic. It's just bland, as you said earlier, and nobody seems to really give a care. They're too busy trying to say everything that's on their mind.
The villains are too busy beating each other up, and the heroes are too busy doing the roll call.
Yeah.
So what about the artwork? What did you think about that?
It's as it was said before. It's definitely dated. Most of the costumes are terrible.
Did anybody else notice that Galactus had two left feet?
No.
I did not. I guess I didn't look at it as closely as you did.
On the scene where he's laying there unconscious and Dr. Doom is like, I've survived, and Galactus is unconscious, Galactus has two left feet.
Well, that's right. That's fantastic. I like that Dr. Doom as a character always kind of dictates everything he's doing as part of his character. But in this is every single character dictates everything they're doing. It's so big. And you start to realize why superhero movies used to be cheesy, because the books were cheesy.
Yeah. But with this, you know, Jason, where you say it wasn't groundbreaking, I think that it was in the sense that...
Right, it was groundbreaking in the sense that it was a big, you know, company-wide crossover, but it wasn't groundbreaking as far as what happens in the riot.
Absolutely not. I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, this is just like every other story. You have this big event that a hero or several heroes, in this case, have to put a stop to, and you know they're going to win at the end. It's not any mystery that one of them is going to die or whatever. But I mean, it's groundbreaking in the sense that this basically launched those massive crossovers. If it wasn't for this, I think that it would be different. You know, we may still have them, but it would be different in the sense of how they are now. Go ahead, Tom.
I'm sorry, I was going to say it was great. You're right, it was groundbreaking in the sense that it changed how the industry presents itself and it changed the approach to stuff. Let's doing these big events once a year or once every 2 years, once or twice a year at this point. So it certainly remolded the industry. And we should also point out, it was a massive success.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, Scott, I'm going to take it to you. Let's get some final thoughts on Secret Wars number one. What do you give it, 1 through 10?
Overall, and I'll probably... 6. It's, you know, as everyone said, it's a historic title, but just looking at it now, and trying to take off the glasses of nostalgia, and it's okay. So yeah, about a 6.
A 6. Okay, fair enough. Jason, 1 through 10, what do you give Secret Wars?
5.
A five. Why a five?
It's just... I'm grading it just on the issue. If I were to read the whole thing, it'd probably go up, but it's just an introductory issue. I really thought the whole you who call yourself blah 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 was just too much. A five. It was okay, but not anything spectacular.
Right on. Tom, final thoughts, Secret Wars 1-10?
I can't give it a 1-10 grade. You can't grade a Model T after you've driven a Maserati. It's ridiculous. I'm not giving it a 1-10. I know you did. You shouldn't have. It was a bad idea. Bad call, Jason. I'm disappointed.
How about this? Concept of the series, the overall idea of Secret Wars.
Sure.
What would you give that?
It's a really, really basic way to put here together. The concept of, but you know, sometimes simple works. The concept is probably a seven.
Fair enough. The other hand, this particular issue, a starting off point, it's exactly that. It's the springboard to what happens in the rest of the series. And as everybody knows, the alien costume is introduced in Secret Wars. That was like the only major good thing to come out of that. Overall,
yes, when we look at it, it's probably had the most lasting effect on comics continuity of any other giant crossover because of the alien costume.
Because the symbiote is still around. I think Flash Thompson
right
now. But overall, I'll give this a 7. Not because of dialogue. If it were Jim Shooter's dialogue, I'd give it a 4. But the art was fair. But it's the overall idea, the concept behind Secret Wars and what it helped do and why it was started gets that kind of grade from me. But moving forward, let's go ahead and take a look at our second issue. This is Ghost Rises Wolverine Punisher Hearts of Darkness. This is a product of the 90s. I mean, I'm holding a copy in my hand right now. Scott, what did you say that Romita makes Ghost Rider's head look like?
It looks like a lumpy marshmallow.
A lumpy marshmallow.
I think he makes everyone's head look like lumpy marshmallows. Did he know there's a hairstyle aside from the mullet?
Probably not.
I'm not looking at this. I mean, I think the 8-year-old girl has a mullet.
Okay, so
party in the back.
So for those that
I think Blackheart has a mullet. He doesn't even have hair.
A dreadlock mullet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So for those that don't know, the whole point behind this book is Blackheart, who is the son of Mephisto, is trying to overthrow his father in the sea to hell to take control, and in order for him to do that, he feels that he needs the help of Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and Punisher, and he invites them all in a rather ridiculous way. That I think by sending them each a note. I know all your secrets. I think
he invites them all to a bed and breakfast.
Yeah. but the point is these three characters at the time were, I think, the hardest edged characters that Marvel had. And it only made sense then to put them all in a book like this. Now, with Howard Mackey, the writer behind this, he was writing Ghost Rider at the time. So it's kind of a Ghost Rider story, but not really, because it ties in a lot with what was going on then. But I think that it more focuses on, like, the relationship between the three, how the three of them work together. But we'll get into that in just a second. Scott, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts on Hearts of Darkness?
First thought would be that I loved the Punisher's pencil porn mustache at the beginning.
What is this?
His disguise is literally a quarter inch of fake hair, and he thinks no one can recognize him.
On his upper.
The hell of a disguise.
Yeah, and the sunglasses.
Yeah. The rest of it's a decent good story for when it was written. I have to agree with all the hairstyles. They're just literally all the same. I mean, Wolverine's looks a little bit moldish.
Yeah.
More than normal, anyway. It's not a bad story. I just think it's kind of cheesy, and I don't understand why any of them would have been like, oh, look, enough. I'll go do that.
Well, yeah, that was a big hang-up that I had with this, is Black...
I don't know. As soon as I see written instructions, I know exactly what they say.
I'm going to remember that. you're going to be our Manchurian candidate. I'm going to send you something in email. You won't know what it is.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah, or maybe text, for that matter.
I can't wait. I can't wait to hear it.
But yeah.
We already worked once. I reviewed Maximum Drive. Oh!
I didn't say it. It's the Phoenix. It'll never die.
Ah. All right, you keep talking. Come on, move on.
Anyway.
Don't dwell.
Yeah, right? Okay. So, with Blackheart sending them the note, that was a big hang-up for me. But the best thing about this series, I think, was Romita Jr.'s artwork. I did not like the way he drew Mephisto. I thought that was kind of weird, but Blackheart looked really awesome. Wolverine looked really good. My favorite scene is when Wolverine and Punisher are charging through that huge thicket of thorns and whatever it is, and then Ghost Rider just tears ass, screaming Blackheart's name right through, cutting a path through it. I love that. Love that scene. Jason, thoughts on Hearts of Darkness?
I know you chose it, so sorry, but yeah, it was boring. I really liked Rita, but I didn't care for the art that much.
Yeah.
Basically, I just wanted to be over with, like, counting pages till it was over with.
What?
Yeah, I didn't get into it. The one thing...
Is it like...
Oh, I mean, it's a bunch
is
of,
it like a rainy day where you're at now? Because...
Nah, I mean, look, if you picked good books, I'd give them good ratings.
I pick great books. This is a cherished part of my collection. I love this book.
Well, I'm sorry.
You're hard to...
I'm not surprised.
one thing that really stuck out was two things. Punisher taking out some demon with a gun. That was kind of comical.
Or like holy bullets though.
Well, at first he has like a rocket launcher, then he has a gun. But then it's after everything's over with and Punisher, Wolverine, and Danny Pettis are standing on that hill, and you can see everybody, you know, all the parents and whatnot, like,
yeah,
laying on the hill or trying to stand up, and Punisher says, was it all real? Like, of course it was real, though. It'd be one thing if they were back at the B&B and, you know, who knows if it was real or not. But all the people are out there, hell, of course it was real. It happened. All the people were there.
Maybe it was, like, because it was so, beyond his perception that it felt surreal, you know?
But it was just the way the line came off. Like,
Like I said,
if they ended up back at the bed and breakfast, then yeah, I could see him saying, was it all real? But when you're where you just were with all the other people, then it kind of, you know.
And there's Rhodes in the last panel.
Yeah. So.
Right on. I understand that, but it's a good story. I love the story. I saved this for this time of year specifically. Like, I won't read it the rest of the year, and I'll wait till the fall to read this issue. Tom, what are your thoughts here?
Wolverine, Punisher, and Ghost Rider are all staying in the same bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we're all clear on that.
Yes.
And Mephisto looks like a big pregnant bird.
Yeah.
I just want to I'm gonna all I did, look. Obviously, about the book is this: I really, really wanted, as Mephisto was on to like one out the door or transdimensional portal or whatever, he turned around to Ghost Rider and said, "Listen, don't tell anyone, but I'm gonna screw up Spider-Man's marriage in 15 years."
Wow.
That's what I want to see in that book, and that's all I got to say about it. Mullets and bad Donovan Jr. artwork.
Scott, I can see what you're saying about how Romita makes Ghost Rider look. I'm flipping through the book right now, and then, you know, every time I read it from here forward, I'm going to think of that.
I'm glad we're in the
book. So we just ruined this before you said.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little, but we'll see next year when we review it again. All right, so Tom, final thoughts on Hearts of Darkness. What would you give this one?
Okay, well, it's a total 90s book, and I know why those three guys are in a book together in the 90s, because they're huge in the 90s. You get it, it's fine. I didn't think it was a crime against humanity, but it has no less impact on me. I know I didn't grade Secret Wars, but I'll give this one a 6.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Scott, what about you? 1 through 10, what do you give Hearts of Darkness?
I'd probably go with 7. I mean, I liked John Romita's artwork, except for the Ghost Rider, obviously. The storyline was incredibly cheesy, but at least they weren't all introducing themselves for a book, so yeah, I'll go with 7.
Okay, fair enough. Jason, 1 through 10.
5.5.
5.5. Why a 5.5?
I did not enjoy it. It's a total 90s story they put them together, because it's the same reason why they put Wolverine and Punisher together earlier than that. What was that book? Because it would sell books.
Jeez, I can't remember the title. It meant that much to me.
But yeah, but you know the one I'm talking about. That's the whole reason they put these characters together, to sell books.
See, with me, this is a product of the era.
It was like, let's sell books first and make a story second. And that kind of came out.
This is definitely a product of the era, but I was growing up at this time, and maybe it has a little bit of nostalgic value to me, but every time I read it, I still feel the same way as when I read it before, really excited and kind of in awe at these hard characters being together, kicking some major tail and driving through thickets of thorns and stuff like that. I thought it was good, and I'll give it a solid 8.
Jesus, dude, come on. All right, 8 it is, you got it.
Solid 8, that's what it gets out of me. But all right, we're going to take a break.
What about at least give it like a liquid 8, or a gaseous 8.
A non-uniform 8, a loose 8, we'll say that. Yeah, it's all right. Almost coming apart, 7.9.
No, you're fine.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jason's got some trivia for us. We'll be back in just a second.
Geek Hotline, how may I help you?
Hello. I was looking for a solution on how to better track my comic book collection. I've been using memory and pen and paper for a while, but it's not really working out well for me. What can you suggest?
That's a very good question, sir. I'll have to consult my fax machine.
I don't understand.
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to stay quiet while I concentrate in order to better serve you. Since you broke my concentration, I'm going to have to go over to my next machine here.
Why are you using Morse code? I think I better call back another time.
I'm afraid I'm not getting any answer to your question here. Let me just move over to this next piece of technology that I have.
Is that a foghorn? Am I hearing a foghorn?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. I can't get the answer to your question at this time. But if I can ask you to hold the line, please, I will get that answer for you as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Did he just drive off? Heck with it. I'll just use stashmycomics.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are at the section of this wonderful podcast where we have some trivia for you. Every week we do this. We give you some really cool, awesome question that you have to figure out the answer to. And if you're lucky enough to be the first one to figure out that answer correctly and follow the rules, you get 1,000 points to go toward any of the contests that we have going on at StashMyComics.com right now. And you get a code for a free digital download. This week Jason's got trivia for us. So Jason, what do you have? But first off, we need to do the rules. That. Number one, you have to be a registered member of Stash My Comics to qualify. If you are not a registered member, it takes less than a minute to register for StashMyComics.com. And if you're not a registered member anyways, you really need to reconsider why and just register, because it's totally worth it. Number two, when you enter your answer, you must also put your username on the forums underneath your answer so we can notify you via private message. If you don't do that, you don't qualify to win. Number three, anyone that is an administrator in any form of, for Stash My Comics or works directly with the podcast is not eligible to play. Sorry, everybody, but that's how it goes. Number four, the first correct answer wins. Once we have a correct answer, it will be noted on the comment section of that podcast, and the winner will be notified via private message. If no winner is found before the airing of the next week's podcast, then the prize is forfeit, and we have to move on to the next week. And let's not forget the Two Guns Initiative. If you win on one podcast, you are ineligible the next podcast, but the following podcast, have at it. With that being said, Jason, what do you got for us this week?
Okay. What is Harley Quinn's first appearance? That's it.
What is Harley Quinn's first appearance?
Correct.
All right. And we will leave that open to debate. We'll leave you to wrap your brains around that, try and figure out the answer. When we come back, Tom's going to be in the bathroom, but me, Scott, and Jason are going to talk about the weekly distraction, which this week is the motivation of the villain. We'll be back in just a second.
Do you hold up the line at the comic book shop because you're trying to find a gem mint copy of some random X-Men comic book? Well, you just might be an anal retentive nerd, but I have the cure for you. Introducing the Enemanator. It works just like an enema for your mind. Don't forget at your local pharmacy or go to StashMyComics.com for anonymous shipping and delivery, only $9.95. StashMyComics.com is not responsible for bodily harm or embarrassment caused by the Enemanator. Batteries sold separately. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the weekly distraction this week. Forget the fact that comic books come out in the middle of the week instead of at the end of the week so people can get them easier with payday. Forget the fact that people say Mitt Romney won the presidential debate. That is debatable, right? Is that a good way to say it? No? Okay. Forget the fact that we're now officially in fall and that it's getting colder and colder every day. This week is the weekly distraction. This is what you will be talking about for the rest of the week. It is the motivation of the villain. Now, with the comic books that were chosen, that kind of falls into that a little bit, you know, like with the likes of Doctor Doom or Lex Luthor. I think those are two of the most prominent villains that you would think of when you think of who a villain is in comic books. But even so far as like the Mole Man or Lizard or the Joker and Malbolgia from Spawn, the list goes on and on and on. Anybody can name their top five greatest villains, you know, or the ones that they think could easily take over the world. The point of fact is what is their motivation? What makes them want to do that? Jason, let's go ahead and start with you. What do you think is the motivation of the villain?
Depends. I guess depends on the circumstances. Because if you look at a character like, let's say the Lizard, like the motivation that he has is the reptilian, you know, survival thing.
Right.
Then you come up with Lex Luthor, who originally he was just mad at Superman for taking his hair, and then it was he wants to protect the world from Superman. It just depends on, you know, the character, how they're written, what their, you know, deal is basically.
Right, but with guys like Dr. Doom, I mean, aside from him wanting to best Reed Richards all the time, he's always had that kind of underlying thing to where he's every scheme that he's doing is always trying to enslave the world in one way or another. But then with the lesser ones, you know, like with the Shocker, I mean, he could honestly care less about enslaving the entire world. All he wants to do is gain like some form of ridiculous respect in the evil community and make Spider-Man along the way. But Scott, what are your thoughts on the motivation of the villain?
I would have to agree. It all depends on which villain we're discussing. I mean, there's so many different types. I mean, there's the crazy villain. There's the villain who thinks he's doing the right thing. There's the villain who's doing it just because he's evil.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, but
like the Joker. I mean, there's really no rhyme or reason to why he does what he does. But go on.
It. I mean, you know, like with, you know, like Luther. He wants to protect the world. He thinks he's doing the right thing. And, you know, he wouldn't mind if he took over the planet also. But, you know, then you got villains like Galactus who are, you know, he's just really hungry.
Yeah,
but Galactus isn't a villain.
Right. We have discussed this before. I mean, in some people's eyes, you know, he could be perceived as a villain because in Secret Wars he's put with the villains. But, you know, like you say, Jason, he's not one, and he kind of mentions that when the Beyonder says, "I'll give you your greatest desire," and Galactus' first thought is to be like, "You'll take this hunger away? I need you to do this now," and it has nothing to do with him being.
He's not a villain. He's a force of nature.
Right.
I mean, it's if you're gonna get mad at Galactus, you're gonna get mad at her.
Well, yeah, but okay.
I mean, he's just doing what they're doing.
So let's talk about the street level villains for a minute, like with the likes that Batman or Spider-Man would have to go against. Those guys aren't necessarily grandiose. I mean, they have delusions of grandeur and stuff like that, but their dreams are small compared to the other guys. You know,
money.
Well, yeah, money.
The street levels, yeah, their whole thing is money, power.
Respect.
Yeah,
fear. Fear, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I feel like I should be writing all of these on a dry room. What else do we have? but yeah, I mean, money, power, fear, respect, all of those things, you know, those guys are kind of going after. But then you have like the rogues gallery of Batman where that isn't necessarily the case all the time. I mean, like, and the Joker is a prime example of that. What is his motivation? You know, nothing. He's doing it, do it because, yeah, because that's how.
He doesn't have a reason.
No. Scott, what thoughts do you have?
I mean, you know, you bring up like, how Mr. Freeze has changed over the years. You know, now he's, you know, was mainly concerned with curing his wife at any means necessary.
Does that necessarily make him a villain then? I mean, if he does what he does to find a cure for the only person he thinks loves him in the world, does that make him a bad guy?
Well, I mean, you know, you stand in front of a freeze gun and let him blast you and play frozen solid and die.
Well,
and,
if I have something Mr. Freeze wants, I'm just going to hand it over to him. There you go, buddy. I like staying warm. You can have what you want.
I mean, he's not necessarily a villain in the classic sense, but he's still going about it in the wrong way.
Right.
I mean, he could be like making ice cubes for kids, and, you know, but he's not.
I think it was villainous to have Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. That
Oh, it was the guy who played Bane.
As this mindless automaton that just picks things up and growls and walks after Poison Ivy.
Hey. No,
I was talking about the first time, not the one in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The one in Dark Knight Rises is obviously a far sight better than that. But okay, so I mean, I think we've pretty much established, you know, like the street level goons and stuff like that. It's all about how much they can accumulate for themselves and what they can do for themselves. But let's take a look at like the bigger guys, you know, like Annihilus, or Dr. Doom. Lex Luthor, for example, the list goes on in Thanos. I mean,
well, those characters, you can boil it down to one thing, basically, is power. You know, whether it's power over people, power over a planet, power, you know, whatever, it's all power. That's what they're all striving for. Lex Luthor, yeah, he's protecting the Earth, but he wants power over Superman.
Right. President, I mean, he didn't exactly do good things while he was there. I mean, he did the initiative where, during 52, where he granted everybody superpowers, and you saw how that turned out. I mean, it was a disaster. I think that with the grander villains like that, their ideas are large, but their vision is very narrow. Because like with Thanos, and the Infinity War is a prime example of that. I mean, he had the gauntlet on his hand. He could control every aspect of whatever he wanted to in the realm of possibility. In his thought, his imagination, however he wanted it to be, it could have been his. He had the power. He had the ability to corrupt and to destroy. And all he wanted to do was impress death. He had these grand visions and things like that, but he was very narrow-minded. He was grounded by the fact that she was disappointed. And so that I think, kind of hindered him from being able to do what he wanted to do. And then with Lex Luthor, you know, like you said, you know, he wants the power and all that stuff, but the one thing that grounds him all the time is Superman. No matter how hard he tries or how often he's able it, he never really beats him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you've got pretty much all the other villains are exactly the same way, as you said. I mean, you know, same with Magneto or, you know, Dr. Doom, as you mentioned earlier, always trying to beat Reed Richards.
Well, see, with Magneto, I don't think I would necessarily consider him a villain because he believes that what he's doing is right. Well, I mean, that's a wrong example.
Well, he believes that what he's doing is in defense of his race.
Exactly.
And it's like the whole what was it, X-Men versus the Avengers, the one from like the 80s,
yeah,
where the Avengers are trying to get Magneto, and at that point Magneto is an X-Man, and they want to bring him in for sinking that sub. He's like, look, they fired on me first.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of what Magneto is accused of doing is retaliatory.
Right. It defends mutant kind and his ideas and his beliefs. Because I believe, he even says in Secret Wars, he's like, I don't kill innocent people. You know?
Yep.
But, all right, Scott, continue with your train of thought on that.
I mean, yeah, I can see the point about Magneto. As it was stated earlier, it depends on the villain, what they're doing. I mean, you know, with, you know, the whole power angle and how it just boils down to motivations. I mean, you know, they're just looking at, they want to get something accomplished, and they don't care how to get it done. Most.
Now, what about those villains that are labeled villains that only do what they do to protect themselves? You know, Magneto could fall into that line, but then, like, so could the Lizard. You know, maybe not this current iteration of the Lizard, but previous iterations of the Lizard, where he just wants to be left alone. You know, but every time Spider-Man comes across him, he's got to beat him up and he's got to, you know, try and fight him, which makes him a villain of Spider-Man. Or even in the Shadowhawk series, you have a creature called the Liquefier, and his whole thing is survival. You know, he feeds on people, but he's doing it to survive. So with survival being their motivation, does that, Jason, does that label them a villain? Because like with Galactus, you know, he's a force of nature. He eats planets for survival. I mean, the people that live on the planet that he's eating would consider him a villain.
No, I mean, if they have to do it to survive, then it's like even if they're eating people, like, if that's the only way that it's like vampires,
right?
Yeah, well, not like the, you know, the Twilight vampires, the real vampires.
Litter.
You know, that's how they survive is, you know, blood.
Right.
So I don't know how you can consider them, you know, just by surviving. But then if you get to like the, if you do more than just survive, like if you, I guess, enjoy it or, you know, do it more often than you have to, then you get in the territory of being a villain.
Doing it for like nefarious means or because of the fact that you like and enjoy causing hurt and pain on people, then I think that would put...
Yeah, or just because you can.
Right, exactly. Scott, what do you think about that?
I'm sorry, you guys cut out. What was that?
Like with the villains or the ones that are labeled as villains, having to do what they do to be able to survive. You know, would they be considered a villain at that point, even though they are hurting the person that they're going against?
Well, as I'm sure was said, the person, the victim, obviously is going to see them as a villain. But, you know, to live, I mean, do cows see the villains? You know, I mean, you eat them, so, I mean, it's all perspective, mainly.
Well, vegetarians would see us as villains because, I mean, we eat meat for enjoyment because we like it.
Everyone is villains, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, you could take it that route then, and then everybody would be a bad guy. Except for vegetarians, because they're pure.
They're eating living plants.
Right, and plants scream. They do. When you tear a leaf off a tree, does it not scream? Does it not? Or when you take its bark off? Right, so take that, vegans. I have sharp, pointy teeth for a reason, to eat and tear, so, you know, and meat's a part of that, and I will never, ever give up a steak. Ever. So, with that being said, let's go ahead and tear it down to final thoughts on the motivation of the villain. I mean, we've covered the street level guys, and their motivation basically comes down to personal gain. You know, what's the most that they can do for themselves, be it petty larceny all the way up to murder. Then you have the bigger guys, the grandiose guys that see a larger picture but kind of have a narrow viewpoint. You know, the likes of Thanos and the likes of Lex Luthor and Doctor Doom. And things of that nature. And then you have even the ones that go for survival, you know, like the Lizard or Galactus or even the Liquefier from the terrible Shadowhawk series. Jason, final thoughts on the motivation of the villain?
It all depends on the character. Just like with heroes, they have different motivations for why they do what they do. Spider-Man is motivated by guilt. Captain America is motivated by a sense of honor and loyalty and, you know, helping the little guy. It just depends on, you know, who's writing the character, what, you know, the character's background, what their whole deal is.
Right. Okay. Scott, final thoughts on the motivation of the villain?
Most of the time, villains seem to be born out of, like, being an underdog and not learning from their mistakes, and they want revenge, or they want to stand out of the crowd, or they want others to fear/respect them, or, you know, just
they want power.
Right.
They just want others to, you know, pay attention to me. It's kind of the way that some of them come across.
Absolutely. It's always about them wanting to be the center of attention. You know, look at me, look what I did, look what I was able to do when no one else was able to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe that might not be how the guy feels who cuts me off on the interstate all the time. You know, when there's plenty of room somewhere else. I see him as a villain. Because I...
yeah, the villainous lane changer.
Yes.
Maybe he's just a force of nature.
That's very possible. That's very possible. But if he's a force of nature, then by God, he needs to slow down. But all right, we've hit the end of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I think that's enough for this week. We're going to have some new segments coming up in the next couple of weeks, couple of months for you. One of those is going to be the Angry Nerd. You want to know what that's about? Listen next week and you'll find out what that's all about. Don't forget to hit up our merchandise store, Zazzle.com/StashMyComics. If you don't already have an SMC t-shirt, that's something you need. You know you do. It's getting kind of chilly out there, so you need a black one to contain the heat. Bumper stickers, hats, mouse pads, you name it, it's there. You need to go there, Zazzle.com/StashMyComics. Don't forget to hit up the blog for all the awesome articles that we have up there. Back issue bin's been gone for a little while, but that's coming back. You need to take a look at the new ones coming up for that. Scott, you've got some new video game reviews coming out. What do you have in store for us next?
I'm finishing up Borderlands 2. I got an extensive Arkham City review, Darkness 2, and a really disappointing review of Resident Evil 6.
I'm interested to see what you have to say about Borderlands 2, because like that's all the rage right now. Everybody that I know is playing that, and they can't get off of it.
It's fun, but I don't know if it's going to be something I'm going to be playing in a month.
Don't forget to hit up some of the other monthly columns that we have. Tommy Lutz, who does our Comics for Noobs, always a great article to read. If you don't know where to go in comic books because there's so many out there, Tommy takes a look at a whole bunch of them for you and tells you what he thinks about them. Listen to what he has to say. He's usually right on the money. Also, Paul O'Connor, who works for the Long Box Graveyard, that's his website. He does a column for us called The Dollar Box. That needs to be checked out, too. Another great column. Also, don't forget to hit up Crowdfunding Flash. It comes out every Wednesday. Chip Reese, he finds some really awesome projects that need your attention, so go ahead and take a look at those. All right, guys, we're done. Is there anything else you need to add? Tom is still in the bathroom, so he won't be with us for the next minute or so before we end it out. Jason, anything else?
I don't think so. Nope, I'm good.
Scott, what about you?
I'll second that.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week. We are out of here.
Wash your hands, Tom.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.